everyone, and welcome to Minute 45 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off the week is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham, A Movie a Day, and host of the Lambcast. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Great to be here, Rob. I'm happy to join you. I hope it doesn't cost me 100 beans to spend the next half hour with you.
Yeah, I hope not too, especially if you're only eating a salad.
That's it.
Or what did you say yesterday that you thought
chicken fried steak. Was
a chicken fried steak with mashed potatoes. I would probably enjoy that more than the salad. You know, but I would close the ketchup bottle. I wouldn't leave it open. I'd be too afraid that I'd spill it and, you know, ruin and you know, lose ketchup. That's what it comes down to.
You'd usually use the sausage gravy instead of the ketchup.
Yeah, it's possible. So, minute 45 begins with Dell sounding very proud of himself and goes all the way till we get these two characters in a slight little spat. Yesterday, Dell quickly changed the conversation because he didn't like talking about himself, and they started talking about trying to catch a flight from St. Louis back to Chicago, but everything is completely booked and they couldn't do it. So at this point, Dell then says to Neil, at least we're still sitting on over 100 beans from my brilliant idea. So we know from yesterday's episode, or from 2 days ago's episode, that he was selling these earrings or shower curtain rings for $5 for the pair. So it means that he only sold 20.
At least 20.
At least.
He says we're sitting on 100 beans. They may have spent some on the meal.
Yeah, but I don't think they spent that much. So let's say they spent $20 on it. You know, again, this is not they're not in a fancy restaurant. They're not sitting in and drinking champagne and things like that.
No.
So, you know, again, they're eating a salad, chicken fried steak, and mashed potatoes. Yeah. So basically, now, first of all, when he used the phrase beans, it got me thinking, what is the origin of the term beans as money? What do you think?
Oh, you know, that's got to be just an old expression. I think I heard it used in gangster films back in the 30s. I'm sure that it's originates, you know, probably from the cowboys. I don't know. Obviously you looked it up. So give me the etymology of beans as a reference to money.
So the first known reference to bean as money was in 1810. And then it was the first time it was known as dough was in 1840. And the first time it was known as sugar was in 1859, which that's the reason why you have the phrase sugar daddy, which was a term used during the Roaring Twenties, which usually meant, you know, it was talking about an elderly man who lavishes minks, diamonds, penthouses, and dollar bills on a younger and presumably deeply caring woman.
I think the term gold digger is the next one that you look up.
Yeah, I would think so. Gold digger looking for beans, right? What's interesting is that I started thinking about it, and I said, well, what other phrase do we know dealing with beans and money? What can you think of?
Well, you know, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans.
No, but money. I don't think it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. I don't think they're referring to money.
A pile of cash, you know, nothing. Nothing jumps out at me.
Well, what came to mind by me is bean counter.
Okay.
You know, you refer to people as a bean counter. You know, which when you think of it that way, it makes sense to have this phrase, you know, dealing with money. You know, it's actually used in most cases in a disparaging way, right? It's a person involved in corporate or government financial decisions, and especially one reluctant to spend money. You know, they say that the bean counters are the ones that, you know, the people up in the ivory tower that are counting the money. They're the ones who are not letting us spend it and things like that. You know, that's the way. And so the first use of the term bean counter was actually in 1971. So, we're only talking about a phrase 50 years old.
That seems very strange to me. That term must have existed before then.
I don't know. That's the, you know, I found that in the, I believe it was the, I think it's the Urban Dictionary. I think that's what it said, that, that the term bean counter was only started to be used in 1971. It could be incorrect. Again, I am not a scholar on beans and bean counting. So I couldn't tell you. But one of the things that I found here interesting is, you know, we were talking before about the different types of phrases for money. So, you know, we had beans, and then we had dough, and then sugar. And obviously there's a lot more there. Some people refer to it as bread. Some people refer to it as bacon. You know, bringing home the bacon is a phrase for, you know, bring home money and stuff like that. So basically the conclusion that this article that I read came to was that the point is that we've got a long history of knowing what money is really about. It's all about food.
You know, that's probably to a large degree true, because that's what it was used for, is to buy secure food. Your existence, you know, yep. Take care of your necessities.
Correct. So, yeah, I thought that was very interesting to find that out. So, yeah, so that's the phrase that Bill uses here. And then he begins to light up a little bit. You know, he's very pleased with himself. He's very happy with what he did here. You know, that he thought of this idea. I mean, I like the fact that, you know, the scene before they get to St. Louis, they're talking about the fact that they didn't have enough money to get beyond St. Louis. You know, that they're only going to get to St. Louis. So at this point, you know, they don't have to have any more exposition to explain the fact that they need money. You know, it's that, you know, as soon as they get there, they show Dell selling the stuff. You know, he's working his magic with selling whatever he needs to sell, and he does a great job of it. And, you know, I liked the way that it moved from one to the other directly without that. And at this point, Neil starts talking and says, you know, you're a terrific salesman. I've been thinking, when we put our heads together, you know, we really have gotten nowhere. And, you know, I think I'm holding you up. Now, first of all, I love the way that this is delivered, because it completely throws everyone off who's listening to it, because you think that Neil has finally turned around and he's about to say something nice about Dell. You know, about that when they put their heads together, they can do something together. And then he just turns the phrase around and turns it into a more disparaging way and just says that, you know, we're not good together, even though you can see that they are good. Actually, they're not good together, because Neil hasn't done anything to help here in this particular case. You know, this is Dell. Dell is the one who, I mean, I assume that it was Dell's idea. I don't think Neil would have said to Dell, I think that you should, you know, try and sell some of your shower curtain rings in order for us to make money. I think it was the idea that, okay, we need money, and what are we going to do? At this point, Neil still has a credit card, which it just...
Yeah. Well, I think Neil is trying to find a way. Look, if he doesn't exactly respect Dell, he starts to understand him a little bit more and feel kind of a kinship with him. But he does want to get away from him. He wants to try and work this out on his own. Dell is always, you know, it's always one of those, he's just uncomfortable right around him. And so he's trying to find a gracious way to detach from Dell. And he starts with the compliment. And then he kind of makes fun of the fact that they've, you know, had these problems and have not really solved their problems. And he suggests, in what he, I'm sure, sees as a gracious way, maybe it's better if we just separate, which of course hurts Dell right immediately.
Right. I mean, I don't think he's trying to be mean here.
No,
But he feels that he can do better on his own.
Right. You know, like we said, he and Dell have not gotten along great. And of course, Dell is so different than Neil. Neil feels self-conscious all of the time when he's with Dell, who is so open and boisterous and outgoing and unafraid of saying what he thinks and feels, and, you know, kind of in your face with the sales thing that we just talked about yesterday. And here he is, you know, trying to find a way to say, you know, I'm gonna let Dell down, in what he thinks is a gracious way by giving the compliment, saying, but it's not working out here, and I'm going to move on, good luck to you. But it does come off a little bit like a brush off, and it's the functional of equivalent of, you know, it's not me, it's you, or it's not you, it's me.
Exactly. At the beginning, Dell actually believes him because he says, no, don't say that about yourself. That's not true, Neil. You know, he's also caught off guard here. He thinks that Neil is trying to say something else. And he's saying, no, Neil, you're wrong. We are good together. You know, it's not true. You're not the one holding me up and stuff like that. And then Neil says, it really isn't true. So at this point, then Neil says in response to Dell, he goes, it really isn't true. And then he goes, no. I really think that we'll get to where we're going a lot faster if we go alone. And then at this point, you see in John Candy, in Dell's eyes, that, you know, the coin has fallen. Or I don't know the exact phrase of what we would call it. You know, it finally has registered.
That's a good term.
It finally has registered in his head. He's like, wait a second, Neil is brushing me off here. He doesn't want to be with me. And so his response is, okay, I see. And at this point, he becomes very defensive and reaches into his pocket, pulls out a very, very large wad of bills, which, as we know, are mostly ones. So it doesn't really make a difference. But and then he starts taking money out of it in order to put money onto the table to pay for things. He's like, okay, if you don't want to be with me, then I don't want to be around you. That type of thing. I mean, this is basically how we're going to leave things for the weekend, because this is how the minute ends. There's really not much else going on. I mean, the two of them, they continue a little more of their conversation. He says, I appreciate that. And he goes, yeah, that's fine. And then Neil's response is, you know, it's just harder for two people to travel, you know. And Dell already knows, okay, this is, sure it is. And then he goes, and if you've got reservations, yeah, I know what you're saying. He goes, thanks for the meal. Yeah, okay, that's all right. So, you know, you see a complete change in Dell at this point. He's no longer acting the same way he's acted up until now. He's been a very carefree, lovable guy all the way up until now. And this is the first time where, because he realizes that he's being talked down to and that he's being hurt, so he changes everything. And he's just, yeah, sure, no problem. I understand. John Candy does a great job by changing the personality of this character so quickly, because it doesn't feel like he's acting.
Well, you know, the character feels dejected, and it's understandable why that's the case. And he plays it well, because this is, you know, Neil is talking in, you know, in code, a high context kind of message at first, hoping that it's going to be subtle enough that it doesn't seem offensive. But by the time Dell has processed it, he does realize that he's getting the brush off, and then he reacts. You know, it's instinctively, you know, when you are rejected, you want to reject back. It's you know, the fight or flight kind of thing. You know, what am I going to do? I'm going to punch
but
back.
But he's not really fighting back.
I don't need
he's,
you.
He's not really fighting back. I'd say that he's more.
Well, the fact that he's trying to give him the cash and move off quickly is like saying, well, I don't need you either.
That's what he's saying. I don't need you either, and I don't want to be around you. If you don't want to be around me, I don't want to be around you anymore.
Yeah, and he's basically defending his self-image. Right. You know, he's trying to protect himself from being the one who's rejected.
Right. That's more or less where it is. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
No, I can't think of anything. You know, this was you know, just pieces of dialogue moving us to the point where they separate again before they come together again, which is going to happen in future minutes. But it does kind of set up this. There are repeated moments of sadness in this comedy. You know, some of them are personal about Dell's story or about Neil and his family. But most of them are about these two guys and the way they feel about each other. And this is one of those low points. And we're just finishing this week on that particular low point. Sorry about that.
Right. No, that's the way this movie works. This that's one of the reasons why this is such a great movie, because of it blends the comedy and the drama together so well. There are comic moments, but in the end, this is a drama. Yes. You know, I wouldn't call this, I wouldn't classify this as a direct comedy. You know,
it's got serious elements to it that are, you know, are important. On the other hand, you know, when, well, I don't want to step on anybody else's minute. So
you can go ahead. You can say whatever you want to say.
Let's face it. When you have that moment on the road, when both of them turn into skeletons, when the crash is happening, that is not a dramatic moment. That's a comic moment.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously. there is a lot of comedy here.
Fun. Yes. Fun.
There is a lot of comedy here. Yes.
Yes.
Right. So every day I talk about the differences between the final script and the movie. There's actually a lot of extended dialogue in this minute. So we'll just quickly go through some of that. Dell starts with, we're still sitting on over 100 beans for my brilliant idea. Neil says, I don't feel right taking your money. And Dell then responds, I didn't exactly come by it, honestly. You know, there's another option open to us. I have friends here in town. I'll bet if we called, they'd put us up. So Del's trying to find them a place to stay, but I like the fact that he says that he realizes that he's basically stealing from his company by selling it. I mean, that was one of the things that I was thinking to myself the whole time. These are not his unless he actually pays for all of his merchandise, and so therefore,
well, he's a jobber. I'm anyway. Sure he gets, you know, he's got
free shower curtain rings.
Well, hey, you ever been to a doctor's office? They give stuff away constantly. You know, we got some free drugs from the sales guy who came in. We've got a whole bunch of this stuff. Try this out. See if it helps you. I'm sure they've got plenty of stuff that they give away.
Okay. Could be. And then
he's got to be carrying something in that trunk.
That's true. Besides, he's got a pillow and a picture of his wife. What else does he need? So, and then Neil continues with, I've been thinking, Del, when we put our heads together, we get nowhere. I think I'm holding you up. And Del says, I'm enjoying your company. You're not that bad. You don't react to crisis very well, but I can overlook that. You have plenty of other admirable traits. And then Neil says, I think we'd probably both get home a lot sooner if we split up. And Del says, I don't see it like that. So then Neil responds, I really think we'll both get where we're going a lot faster on our own. And then Del catches on, looks down, and says, okay, in other words, I'm a pain in the ass. No, not at all. Yes, I am. Everything I touch turns to shit. My mother used to tell me I had twice as much heart as brain. And then he looks at him and says, I was only trying to help. And Neil says, I know, Del, and I appreciate it. If I can count you as my friend, I'm happy. And that's pretty much how the dialogue ends. Now, again, this isn't necessary. It says a little more about the characters if it would have stayed in, but it's not something that's really necessary.
Yeah, well, we get some hints about the way Del sees himself later on in the story as well. So some of that does come out, you know, that he's
got a big heart.
He overdoes things, you know, that because that's a subject of conversation that he has later on, kind of with his, with the picture of his wife. But again, that's down the road.
Right. That's true. All right. Anything else you want to say about the movie?
Nope.
All right. Great.
We're doing the John Candy films.
Yes, we are. So every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Candy, where my guest gives their top five John Candy performances. So, Richard, what have you got for us?
Well, I'm going to mention the movie that I first recognized John Candy in and said, I think I've seen this guy on SCTV, and that's Stripes. So that's number five for me. Although I had seen Silent Partner years before, but I didn't connect him at all with that show and that character. So Stripes would be the first time that, you know, he stood out for me. He's the star of Cool Runnings, which is a fun picture. He's got a similar kind of story arc here, because he's got a sad background that he has to kind of overcome. And that's part of what he's doing, is coaching the Jamaican bobsled team. So I think there's a little bit of a link between the characters here, even though they have different enterprises that they're engaged in. They are,
yes,
you know, still coping with their lives as it is. Number three is Uncle Buck, because it's just fun. You know, it's John Candy as most of us kind of imagine him. I think his best performance as an actor was in Only the Lonely, where he plays opposite Ali Sheedy as a love interest.
Yes,
and his mother is Maureen O'Hara, and it's like that. I think that is one of her final screen performances. And I love the Roy Orbison song, and I thought Candy was great in that movie. But my favorite John Candy movie is Splash, where he plays Tom Hanks' brother. They don't look like they're really related to each other, but you know, they fake it out pretty well with the kids that they have playing them when they were supposedly younger, and it's a good story. He's kind of like the rambunctious version of Jiminy Cricket to Tom Hanks's character, you know, telling him what he needs to get out of life, not to correct him, but to get him to loosen up a little bit and have some fun. And he's a good character there, and so I like that film the best, I think.
Okay, great. That's a very solid list. That's very good. Every day we have a segment known as Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will tell a story about an adventure or misadventure that one of us happened to have over the course of our journey through life. So, Richard, you have one last one for us to hold everyone off till our next guest gets here on Monday?
Well, if I went through all of the details on this one, we would be here all weekend long. But it's a pretty good, you know, remembrance, memory for me. In 1999, I did the vacation thing myself. We rented a van. I put my wife and my two kids in the van. They were 9 and 11 at the time. And we drove all the way around the country. We went from Los Angeles to the Grand Canyon, down to New Mexico, through Texas, over to Arkansas, down to Mississippi, across Alabama, across Georgia, through North and South Carolina to Washington, D.C., up through the East Coast into New York. We went to Niagara Falls. We went everywhere that you can imagine.
Wow.
We did 32 states in a month and two countries, because we had dinner in Canada one night.
Oh, wow.
So when I returned the car, it was a rental car. We'd put almost 11,000 miles on it. And the lady at the car counter said simply, she didn't say I was fucked. She said, "Where didn't you go?" And I had a hard time answering her because we went a lot of different places.
Well, at least the car was there.
Yes.
You didn't reach the, you know, you didn't reach the spot where there's no car waiting for you.
Yes. I wasn't returning it all burned to shreds, you know.
That too. That's another one. Right. Oh, wow. That's a great story. And it must have been a great adventure for you guys. Do your kids still reminisce about that also like you do? Or you know, they probably complain most of the time during the trip.
They remember only bits and pieces of it. They remember some of the sites we went to. My youngest daughter remembers going to Monticello and seeing Jefferson's house because she was a big fan there. And we went when we were in New York, we went to a show. We saw Bernadette Peters in Annie, Get Your Gun, and they have a memory of that. We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they have pretty good memories of that. We also visited relatives on that trip, and they remember those kinds of things. But they don't remember all the stories that I remember. They don't remember every gas station, every hotel, every time we got overcharged with something. They do remember seeing the handsome young man standing with his shirt off when we were driving through Iowa in the middle of the cornfield, and they said, "Ooh, I like Iowa."
Excellent. So you want to tell people for the one last time how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, once again, you know, you can find my site at kirkhamamovieaday.com. That's on the WordPress site. If you want the full site, it's at kirkhamclass.blogspot.com. That's a blogger site, and I've got pages there that include links to several other projects that people might enjoy. The podcast that I host is the Lambcast, and you can find that at the Large Association of Movie Blogs or largeassmovieblogs.com. And on Twitter, it's at RichardK007.
And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher they might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is quite simple. Just do a quick search in whatever search engine that you use. for Movie Rob Minute. You can find our website. You can find Twitter. You can find our Facebook group. So everyone have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. But until then, you're fucked.
You are fucked.